Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Technically, if you're a Catholic, you might be excommunicated just for listening to this. Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm not sure that's the exact rule. But today we're going to get the facts on what you can and cannot say about the ordination of women in the Catholic Church from two people who are in the trenches. In the studio with us is Father Roy Bourgeois, an American priest in the Maryknoll Order of the Roman Catholic Church and founder of the human rights group School of America's Watch, which is a whole other show, maybe for a later day. Welcome, Father Bourgeois.
It's good to be with you.
And on the phone from Cincinnati with a bum knee is Sister Louise Akers. She's a religious scholar and founder and coordinator of Sisters of Charity of Cincinnati Office of Peace, Justice, and Integrity of Creation. Among many other things too numerous to mention here, welcome, Sister Louise.
Thanks. It's good to be with you.
Father Bourgeois, let's get started because I think the background and where you both are coming from is important to the listeners. You are outspoken on many issues, including U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. But you're well known these days for delivering a homily at the ordination ceremony of a woman at a Unitarian Universalist church in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yes, and what led to this, Anne, is I've been a Catholic priest for 37 years, and like most Catholics, I have a deep love for my church, and I have a great joy in my ministry. And for years, over 25 years, I've been addressing the injustice of U.S. foreign policy in Latin America with a focus on this U.S. Army School of the Americas. And in my many travels in the United States after returning from my work in Bolivia and El Salvador, I met many devout Catholic women who said to me that they too, as women, are being called by our loving God to serve our church as Catholic priests. And I really had to think about what they were saying. We were always simply told that it was the tradition that only males can be ordained. And basically was really it's not a complicated theological issue here. After doing a lot of research and simple reflecting on what I was hearing, what we've got here at the very core of the church teaching, I and many have discovered, is this sin of sexism. Basically, you know, what we're being told is that only males can be ordained. And that does not simply stand up to scrutiny when we as Catholics, we say that God created men and women of equal dignity and stature. We all say, the Pope, all clergy, all Catholic priests, that this call to priesthood comes from God. And therefore, the basic question I have to ask myself, along, I think, with every Catholic priest, including the Pope, who are we as men to say to women that our call is valid, but theirs is not? Who are we to negate God's call of women to the priesthood? And what I have come to is a grave injustice against women, a grave injustice against our church, and of course, a grave injustice against our God who calls women to the priesthood.
Now, the Catholic Church has a very simple explanation for why it opposes the ordination of women as priests. Why don't you say what it is? I mean, you've heard it a million times.
They draw on the Greek philosopher Aristotle, and then the great saints in the early church, St. Augustine, Thomas of Aquinas. And what they said back then they can't use that language today. I mean, they basically said in many different ways very clearly, males were superior, females were inferior. And that women were seen as the helpmate, you know, for men. And that doesn't really, you know, you can't use that language today. So what they say now is that Jesus chose only male apostles. But that's not accurate either, because we have Mary Magdalene, a woman who's chosen by Jesus to bring the good news of the resurrection, which is really at the very core of our Christianity, is the resurrection. She was chosen by Jesus to bring the message to the men who were actually hiding out behind locked doors out of fear. And actually, when she brought the message from Jesus about the resurrection, the men did not believe her. And today, 2,000 years, men are still not believing women when they say we are chosen. We, too, are called to be equal members of the church, of the faith community.
Sister Louise, tell us a little bit about your history with the Catholic Church and how you came to this to form the same opinion, essentially, as Father Bourgeois.
Very much so, the same opinion. My background in my ministry ever since I entered the Sisters of Charity, has been focused on justice and taking a strong, hard look at the injustices and trying, with the grounding for me, to do something about that has been what we call Catholic social teaching, which focuses on the dignity of the human person and the common good and other principles also. So for me, at the heart of this particular issue, even though I've been involved in myriad other issues such as racism and immigration, a war and violence, women and poverty, I think at the heart of this issue, and it's related to what Roy just said, is the value, the dignity, the equality of woman. And until the church, the institutional church, recognizes that in practice, it continues to be a beautiful theory, but in fact, it is about the equality of the person of woman and the person of man. And to me, that's at the heart of this issue, and it is a calling. And I have never felt called to priesthood. Some people think this is an issue for me because I want to be a priest. I do not want to be a priest. There's a whole other discussion about women in this current structure of the institutional church. Is it possible to transform it from within? So many of us are trying to transform the church, to take a good hard look at itself to say, where can we be better disciples, which is a whole other aspect of ministry in the church. How are we disciples of Jesus? And Jesus certainly throughout Scripture shows his sensitivity, his reverence, his acceptance of woman as equal, just as Roy said about Mary of Magdalene.
Father Bourgeois, you said you started talking to women and women started telling you about how they felt called. But the first time you heard that, what did you think?
Well, like most men, you know, I was a little threatened. You know, that sexism is a part of all of us guys and, you know, the card-carrying members of this all-boys club. I mean, I want to say, too, I mean, I've been doing so much research on this over the last year. I was introduced to the women's ordination movement when I attended the ordination of a dear friend, Janice Severodesinska, very active in our SOA Watch movement. But really what I had to look at was some basic questions. I mean, when I was a young man in the military years ago in Vietnam, I mean, I felt God was calling me to the priesthood. And as a male, I entered the Marino community, was ordained, no problem, and then sent to serve the poor in Bolivia. And what I began to realize in addressing this injustice for many years of U.S. foreign policy in Latin America, I discovered an injustice much closer to home in my church. And what I had to do when the injustice became very clear, so clear, I mean, I could not simply be silent. Silence, I have come to believe, is the voice of complicity. I mean, I am really, part of the old boys club, you know, as a Catholic priest. And what I began to realize was that my silence would say, this is okay. You know, that women must sit in the back of the Catholic bus. You know, I grew up in rural Louisiana where it was our tradition to have separate schools, you know, for blacks, whites. And that was our tradition. And what I'm hearing a lot from fellow priests and our leaders in Rome, it's that this is our tradition. Well, I've discovered that this tradition is rooted in the sin of sexism. And sexism, like racism, is a sin. And no matter how hard they or we may try to justify discrimination against others, in the end, it is always wrong. It's immoral.
Sister Louise, let's talk about a little bit about what led you to the forefront of this movement. Father Bourgeois was threatened with excommunication for his stand on the topic and for delivering the homily at the ordination of a woman last year, and he's still waiting for the papers to arrive. Do you have any, Father Bourgeois? Have you heard anything since then up from the Vatican?
No, like most women, they are those who are ordained, they say they are excommunicated automatically. What I did after attending the ordination, participating in the ordination of Janice Severodesinska, I received a letter from Rome giving me 30 days to recant my belief in public statements that support the ordination of women, or I will be excommunicated latae sententiae, which means automatically. Okay. And I'm being I'm hoping that, I mean, that they will acknowledge receipt of my letter. I did respond to that letter, given my reasons why, in conscience, I could not recant. And brought up different issues, and I'm still waiting for an acknowledgement. Some are saying that it was automatic since I was given 30 days. I did not recant, so I have been excommunicated. But I'm still hopeful that they will have the decency to respond, at least acknowledge receipt of my letter, and answer some of the issues that I brought up.
Sister Louise, your situation is a little bit different. Why don't you tell us what happened down in Cincinnati?
I'd like to also connect with one of the things that Roy talked about silence, mm-hmm. Because that's part of my story. Because I have been an advocate and educator for justice for over 40 years, my whole adult life, one of the things that came to me as I left Archbishop Pelagic's office on August 10th is how so often when things like this happen, it's overlooked or it's silenced. And two quotes came to my mind as I was headed home. One was from Catherine of Siena in the 14th century, who told us, "Cry out as if you had a million voices. It is silence that kills the world." And that hits me very strongly in a number of justice issues, but in this case, certainly it strikes home. The other is from prophet and a hero of mine, Martin Luther King Jr. I did my master's thesis on him. And at one point he said, "Our lives begin to end when we keep silent about things that matter." So not too long after my meeting with Archbishop Pelagic, I was approached by a journalist, Judy Ball, here in Cincinnati, and asked if she could write a story and submit it to National Catholic Reporter, which he did, and that's really what then was the catalyst, I think, for a lot of the coverage that's ensued since then. Basically, what happened is my name was on the website of the Women's Ordination Conference, and I was on the advisory board, and I was also on the anti-racism task force. And a person who I would describe as a pre-Vatican II Catholic, extremely right-wing, reported this to the bishop. And because it was on the website, just to cut to the chase, as they say, mm-hmm. I was asked to withdraw my name, or I could no longer teach for credit in the archdiocese, but I could still teach in parishes and diocesan-related institutions.
Okay.
However, that changed. When I met with Archbishop Pelagic, the end result of our conversation was that unless I not only took my name off the website, but made a public statement that I had changed my mind and supported the current teaching on women's ordination, that I could no longer teach in diocesan-related structures. And I was very surprised, in fact, shocked, and I said, "I'm sorry, I can't do that. It would be a lie. It would be against my conscience." And so he said, "Then you accept the consequences." And the consequences are that I no longer am able to teach in parishes or diocesan structures. But that doesn't mean I don't teach in the geographic mm-hmm. area of the diocese. And my work entails a lot of other things.
Right.
But I thought it was an important part of my work because the teaching was to teachers and DREs and other parishioners. So that's what's happened, is that I have been curtailed as far as my teaching is concerned.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. If you would like to join the conversation about whether to ordain women priests in the Catholic Church, give us a call. Tell us first if you are for, against, or undecided on the issue. The number is 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820, NPR News. We'll be right back.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good afternoon, I'm Amy. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. At noon today, Fresh Air will be here. Ever since writing the bestseller, Taliban, which was published shortly before 9/11, the Pakistani journalist Ahmed Rashid has been considered an authority on Pakistan and Afghanistan. He'll talk about the choices facing President Obama and where the situation continues to deteriorate. That discussion on Fresh Air at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Currently 52 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:21. Sunshine in the forecast for this afternoon and a high of 65. Cloudy skies tonight and a chance of rain showers throughout the night. Not as chilly as last night. The low tonight, 50 degrees. Rain showers for Friday and a chance of a thunderstorm, a high of 65 for Friday. And on Saturday, cloudy skies and a high of 60. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about whether or not to ordain women priests in the Catholic Church. The Church is unequivocal. The apostles were male. So will be the priests. Joining us today in disagreement are Father Rory Bourgeois, who has been threatened with excommunication for his stand on the topic, and Sister Louise Akers, who lost a job teaching religion in the diocese in Cincinnati because she would not disavow her support for women's ordination in the Catholic Church. If you would like to join the conversation, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And why don't we take a call right now from Ben? What's your story?
Well, thanks for taking my call, first of all. And I just want to say also to Roy, you're one of my personal heroes. I'm an ex-Jesuit. I worked for a while down in El Salvador with Larry Reichle when he was down there. So some of the folks that you know, I know. But I love the work that you guys have done. I left the Society of Jesus some years ago, and it was largely over the issue of celibacy. And I just wanted to bring that into the conversation, too, that for me, so much of what I see in terms of the way the Church treats women is a general way in which the Church treats a fear of the feminine and a fear of sexuality in general. And, you know, for me, it reached a point at which I simply couldn't stomach it anymore. I needed to have female companionship. I needed to be part of the world in that way. And what I find, I'm definitely in favor of women priests, and I'm also in favor of married priests. I think there's a huge issue that Catholics lack in terms of being aware of and able to deal with the feminine in people and sexuality in general. And that's basically the comment I wanted to make, and I'll take my or whatever comments you have off the air.
Okay, thank you, Ben. Well, Sister Louise, Father Bourgeois, what about that? That sort of takes it a step deeper in a way?
For me, I think the fear of the feminine, the fear of woman, is part of the root of what's happening in our church today with regard to women's ordination. Historically, the tradition in the church has been really anti-female. If you read the early church fathers and some of the documents connected with women, for example, years ago in the early centuries of the church, Thomas Aquinas in his Summa Theologica, he was the theologian before Vatican II, he says that women, when a fetus is born, and it is inferior and comes out female. If it's fully developed as a human, then it comes out male. And wow. Jerome said, women are the gate of hell. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And then more recently in our time, the U.S. bishops tried a number of times to draft a pastoral letter on women, and it kept going back and forth between the U.S. bishops and the Vatican. And the Vatican kept changing. As Roy said earlier in the program, sexism is a sin. And the bishops had that in their first draft on women, the pastoral letter on women. And that was taken out of the draft. So we do indeed in our institutional church have a long tradition that is, if not directly opposed to the female, feminine side of God or the church, it's certainly suspect.
Father Bourgeois.
I think our caller, what it gets down to, I mean, our church is in a deep crisis today. I don't know how we can survive without a married clergy that so many people, the polls are showing this, that the vast majority of Catholics support a married clergy and women priests. This comes from a Gallup poll taken, you know, like 8 years ago, and today the numbers are even higher. You know, this sexual abuse scandal has rocked our church to its roots. I mean, it has devastated the church. Over 5,000 priests, you know, abusing over 12,000 children, while, you know, bishops simply were silent, looked the other way. In my travels, and, you know, the Catholic Church has put out over $2 billion in litigation. And in my travels, people tell me about their churches closing. New Orleans, where I spoke recently, over 30 churches. Boston, over 50. Buffalo, New York, wherever I go. We have a shortage of priests, and hundreds of Catholic churches are closing. And, of course, people, you know, this say what should be said. It doesn't make sense. We have women. We have married clergy, you know, who are eager and called to serve our church. And why are we closing these churches? When I entered Marino way back in the 60s, we had over 300 seminarians. Today we have 7. We, the all-male Catholic clergy, is going the way of the dinosaurs. And simply put, if we are to have a healthy and vibrant church, we need, according to the teachings of Jesus, we need the wisdom, the experience, the compassion, the leadership of women in our church.
Okay, let's take a call now from Kathleen. You oppose women's ordination. Can you tell us why?
Yes, I do. Well, I don't think that the church is sexist. I don't think they're anti-feminine or feminist. I think there's always been a role for women in the church. As a matter of fact, today is the feast of St. Thérèse of Lisieux, who was a young French Carmelite who died at the age of 24. She was beatified by Pope John Paul II and named a doctor of the church, one of the leading teachers. Her theology at a young age is so profound that she was able to be named a doctor of the church. Also, the sister who called in from Cincinnati, whose name I didn't catch. But
Sister Louise, she's on the program.
Okay, Sister Louise. She quoted St. Catherine of Siena and said that that we had to speak out, that silence was the worst problem, you know, when there was some an injustice to be corrected. Well, St. Catherine of Siena was also named a doctor of the church. She advised the Pope. She had advised a couple of popes and was, through her her requests, her prayers, her pleading, was responsible for returning the seat of the Holy Papacy back to the Vatican. And actually, the Pope did return to Rome at her behest. But more than that, I think that women have just always had a very important role to play in their writings. St. Catherine of Siena and St. Thérèse of Lisieux are two of the most important because they are doctors of the church. But also many other women, and they've never felt that their place in the church has been put down or repressed in any way. They have a very important role to play, and just because they're not ordained priests does not mean that the church does not recognize their value and respect them for all they've contributed to the church. For these and many reasons, I think it's working fine.
Okay, Kathleen.
Thank you very much. Thanks for calling.
I'd like to respond to Kathleen.
Sure.
With regard to Catherine of Siena, for example, she did advise popes, and the point being that she was not silent, that she did speak out, and it made a difference when she spoke out. And I think today, in the 21st century, our church is very, even though the essentials are the same, our church is very different than it was centuries ago. And one of the things that's happened is that women, lay women, and part of the laity are women religious, are much more educated and public in our ministries than centuries ago. And so Catherine of Siena and Thérèse were certainly exceptions to the rule. Today, when we think about the role of women in the decision-making of the church, the people who make decisions connected with church ministries and outreach, are ordained men. That's who the decision-makers are. And I think it's important that ordained men be willing to share that decision-making power with married clergy, as Roy mentioned, and also with women ministers, because it really is a lack in our church. If you look at even the corporate world or other religions and faiths, there is an added dimension when women are encouraged and given the, quote, right to be part of the power structure, and I mean that in the best sense of the word, not a negative sense, of decision-making with regard to the poor and other strong justice issues in our world.
Okay. Well, let me just briefly, sure. I mean, what I keep coming to in my research, in my questioning, in listening to women, you know, really express their call to priesthood, that basic question, you know, excluding women from the priesthood implies that, you know, we as men are worthy and women are not worthy. And I've got a real problem with that. I think no matter what we say in our teaching, it implies that men are worthy, women are not worthy. And what I've come to, and I discovered that in Vietnam, God does not bless war. You know, in Bolivia, I discovered that God does not bless oppression. And now in my church, I have discovered that God does not bless sexism. And Vatican, the documents are there. Vatican II says it very clearly in the church in the modern world. It can't be any clearer. Every type of discrimination based on sex is to be eradicated as contrary to God's intent. And a very important quote dealing with conscience is this, you know, Cardinal Ratzinger, who's our present Pope Benedict, said it very well during Vatican II. His quote, "Over the Pope, there still stands one's own conscience, which must be obeyed before all else." And to silence, you know, Louise and myself and these women who are coming, speaking at this from conscience, which is very, very sacred, it's simply what bothers me so much, angers me really, and so many Catholics, they don't want to debate this issue. They don't, you know, like discussion, no debate, go to your room. Well, I'm sorry, but you are not the owners of the church. You know, they do claim, men do claim the divine right to interpret the scriptures, the Holy Scriptures, and they claim to know the will of God. And they, of course, are in this situation of power. And what we are saying, especially women, I'm sorry, but you are not the owners of our church. We are mature Catholics, people of faith, and you do not have a monopoly of the truth, and we want to debate this issue. And what I'm finding, they don't want to debate the issue because they know they are wrong. They are not confident. They know their teaching cannot stand up to scrutiny.
There are other things in the church that have changed over time. You know, 40 years ago, girls weren't allowed to be servers and during Mass. Women weren't permitted to share the host. There has been a lot of change. How has that occurred? Sister Louise.
I think, and in fact, I said this in my conversation with Archbishop Pelagic, is that when I teach a course, in this case, the particular course that was of concern to some people was the course I teach on church. And whenever I teach any course, no matter what the topic, I make sure everybody understands the teaching of the church on a particular topic. And so then, depending upon what, if it's a contemporary issue or not, I raise questions around, for example, women in the church. And I do that because I think part of the role of theology is to be in dialogue with the magisterium or the teaching of the church. And historically, as you said, Anne, that's how doctrine has evolved. That's how it's changed, because there's new insights, be they theological insights or sometimes because of science. I mean, when you think of the extreme example of Galileo, I mean, it changes because of that openness rather than the closed-mindedness that seems to cut off any discussion or debate.
What was the change that occurred that permitted girls to be servers during Mass? Father Bourgeois, I mean, can we talk about?
Well, I mean,
I'm just trying to get a, get a feel for an example of.
I mean, that was, you know, I received a number of just hundreds of letters, and it, one of the, you know, a father of three girls, you know, daughters simply said that his daughters pick up at an early age sexism in the church, and it became so offensive. I mean, little girls, of course, like, we've got a little problem here. I too want to be an altar server, and why not? And so, of course, that was changed. But what we have here, you know.
Was that changed because of public pressure to change it?
Or yes, of course.
Okay.
Of course. Now, for I mean, what we have here, change will come from the bottom up, not from the top down. You know, we've learned this in so many movements.
Which is kind of exactly opposite of the way the church operates, though.
They're going from the model, you know, we have the truth. It's a very top-down model. This is not the model that Jesus really taught. The model of the church coming out of the teachings of Jesus was this circular model, calling all to the table as equals. And it's one of service, not one of power. And what we have here is, I think, an abuse of power, a concentration of power that comes, of course, with patriarchy. I mean, we're up against, you know, 5,000 years of patriarchy here. But change is inevitable. One last thing about, for example, you know, a friend of mine who is a Catholic deacon was called in recently by his bishop for talking about women priests just in a homily, you know, a few sound bites. And so he was called into the bishop's office. And he said, look, Bishop, I have, you know, two little girls, and if they feel called to the priesthood, I will support them. And the bishop looks at him and says, God will not call them. And what arrogance. But this, I mean, this bishop and many church leaders somehow, you know, they feel they're going to interpret the will of God. But let me just say, it's that attitude of arrogance, abuse of power, that's at the very root of this movement and all movement. This is a movement whose time has come. And it's not complicated, you know, theology here. People of faith know what we have here at its very core is a grave injustice.
We're going to take a – I'm sorry, Sister Louise. We're going to have to take a quick break, though. What do you think about women's ordination in the Catholic Church? Give us a call at 614-262-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And when you call, tell us if you're for, against, or undecided. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. We'll be right back.
Ever since writing the bestseller Taliban, which was published shortly before 9/11, the Pakistani journalist Ahmed Rashid has been considered an authority on Pakistan and Afghanistan. He's based in Lahore. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with him about the tough choices President Obama is facing in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins at noon, only 20 minutes away, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurovich, 53 degrees in downtown Columbus. You can get more radio and less fundraising. The WOSU Fall Membership Drive begins soon, and you can help reduce the number of days. For every $20,000 we raise before the drive begins, we'll take one day off of the drive. Visit WOSU.org/pledgefree for details. WOSU Public Media and the Ohio Designers Craftsman Museum present A Preview of Craft in America, Saturday, October 3rd. Call 614-487-7119 to make reservations. Then watch Craft in America on Wednesday, October 7th at 8 p.m. on WOSU-TV. In the weather forecast, sunshine this afternoon and a high of 65, cloudy skies tonight with a chance of rain and a low of 50. You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the fight for women's ordination in the Catholic Church with Father Roy Bourgeois and also with Sister Louise Akers. She lost a job teaching religion in the Cincinnati Diocese because she would not disavow her support for women's ordination in the Catholic Church. And Father Bourgeois is was told he would be excommunicated for his stand on the topic. Father Bourgeois will be talking on women's ordination at tomorrow at 7 p.m. at
this evening.
Glad you're here to correct me on that one. I didn't know the month changed. At the First Unitarian Universalist Church at 93 West Weisheimer Road in Columbus. Again, he'll be talking tonight at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Universalist Church on Weisheimer Road. I wanted to get back, Sister Louise, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the issue of the calling and the fact that you said that you weren't called to the priesthood, so it's not about you.
Absolutely not.
But one question I wanted to ask, and then just to talk generally about that sort of mystical thing, how many nuns do you think are out there that, not as this sounds pejorative, but quote-unquote settled, that went that way instead of the way they wanted to go because that was the only way they could go?
You mean and became a sister instead because they couldn't be priests?
Right.
I have no idea. However, I do know a number of sisters currently who feel called to the priesthood, and there's real pain around this because there is a definite pull as far as they're concerned, and they have gifts that could certainly be enriching to the current status of the priesthood. I think the whole thing of being called, I've received hundreds, literally hundreds of messages from people around the country, around the world, in our own city, an archdiocese. And one that really stands out for me was from a young mother who said that her daughter, 7-year-old daughter, was preparing to make her first communion in the Catholic Church. And that her daughter said, this was a few months ago, her daughter told her mom, "I want to be a priest when I grow up." And she said, "I told my daughter, honey, girls can't be priests in the Catholic Church." Then she went on to tell her daughter that she talked about the Episcopal Church, the Lutheran Church. Mm-hmm. And then she said, this was in an email, and then she said, "You happened," meaning myself and my situation. And she said, "I sat down with her with the article in the Cincinnati Enquirer, showed her your picture, and said, maybe someday you will be able to be a priest in the Catholic Church." Now, to me, that's an example of this calling. And of course, she's 7 years old. She probably changed her mind a number of times, and maybe eventually will get back to it. Who knows? But that also, I think, is related to, again, something that Roy said earlier, is the time is now. The time for this issue that's not going to go away keeps growing in its intensity and expansion. And I think part of that is what the church also refers to as the sense of the faithful, that sometimes it's from the people of God within the church emerges a new idea or a timely idea, because this certainly isn't a new idea, but I think it's very timely in the 21st century of Catholic Church.
Okay, let's hear from Pat. Pat, you're on the air.
Me?
Pat? Yes, you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I am a lifelong Catholic, and, two things I want to say. I went to a memorial service for my stepmother at St. Mary's of the Springs, and the sisters conducted the Mass with the exception of the consecration. And it was beautiful. It was absolutely lovely. And I thought, the other thing is that my reason for supporting the ordination of women is very much like the women's liberation idea. I mean, if people are called to whatever profession they're drawn to, why not select from 100% of the population as opposed to only 50% of the population? I mean, wouldn't you get a higher quality individual if you were drawing from a larger pool as well as maybe more people?
That's an interesting idea, Pat. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Father Bourgeois.
Yeah, I think Pat hits on something very important. I've come to the conclusion that in this crisis the church is experiencing today. I mean, if we are going to have a vibrant and healthy church, right now, as she says, we're leaving out 50% of the population, women. And they, of course, will bring to our church the wisdom that we need, the experience, the compassion, the courage, I must say, the courage. What we have is an institution where women's voices are not being heard on an equal level here. The voices are the voices of men. We have had the pulpit for over 2,000 years. And just something important, too, that Louise touched on, the issue of pain that women experience when they are denied to pursue their profession, their vocation. I did not experience that as a guy. Again, as a male, I was able to enter the seminary. I felt God, I really feel, I want to say this, God, I believe, wants us to be happy, to live in peace, to have hope and joy in our lives. And when we, you know, we look at all these different options we have in a way of vocations, professions, we're looking for meaning. And women, like men, feel they will find just joy and happiness and meaning in their ministry as a priest. But they are told, no, you need not apply. You are a woman. And I've only gotten glimpses of what that means to women to be denied of their vocation. It brings with it a lot of pain. And that is unacceptable. That is not the will of God. That is not the intent of Jesus. This is not the model of church that Jesus and God intends. And I must say, what this movement is all about, it's not complicated. It's really struggling to reform the church, to bring about a model of church where women and men are equally treated.
Yeah, go ahead.
And
Sister,
I would also add to that, Chris Schenck, who's the director of Future Church, which is based in Cleveland, Ohio, one of the things that she frequently says, and I think it's at the heart of this shift that seems to be happening in teaching, she said, in light of the current reality of priesthood today, she said, what is our priority in the church, in the Roman Catholic Church? Is our priority that we are a Eucharistic faith community, or is our priority a male celibate priesthood? Because if it is a male celibate priesthood, already there are people with all over the world and also here in the United States, there are people, there are parishes who no longer have a priest because of the shortage of priests. And even though my strong argument deals with what I said earlier about the value and dignity of woman, from a practical standpoint and from an enriching standpoint for the people in parishes that no longer have priests, you know, what is the priority? We say we're a Eucharistic faith community, but if we don't have priests, how's that going to happen? There have to be some adjustments. There have to be some changes.
Irene, you're on the air.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
A couple of comments. First of all, I'm one of those women, Catholic women, who has been ordained. And it is not without years and years of struggling between what you know the church to be teaching and what you feel called by God to do. And I wanted to mention that it's just not, you know, this isn't the same as women's liberation. It is not. But it is a sense of being called. And have you ever felt a call from God and say no to God? It does not go away, okay? It's not something, I'm not a hero or a brave person that would have chosen this on my own. But anyway, I'm very grateful to be ordained, and I would be very grateful to be able to exercise my ministry in a broader way than what I currently do. But my comment really has to do with this, the comment by Roy about sexism in the church. I think any Catholic today simply has to reflect, and that's the important part, to take the time to reflect that the church did very little other than pay money with the sexual abuse scandal in the church. Very little. It never called into question the other priests in the diocese or whatever. It did nothing but pay out lost. And then what does the Vatican do it then launches a full-scale investigation of religious women in the Catholic Church in the United States. Women who have been the most faithful group in church history to be obedient to the call of Vatican II, to take it to heart. You know, you're talking about women who have had to, who for years lived with a habit and so on, and suddenly, in obedience to their loving church, had to learn how to wear secular clothing or clothing of the day. So this isn't, and I could go on and on,
yeah.
I won't, but the issue is, it is not a brain, it's not brain surgery. It is simply the powers to be are very threatened when the issue of sexism is raised. And that was my comment.
Thank you, Irene, for calling in. We have an email now from Lori. She says that historically, is there any indication that the exclusivity of male-only priests comes from the historical roots of men-only priests in Judaism? Even now in Orthodox Judaism, only men are permitted to become rabbis, but the reasoning is completely different. Father Bourgeois, I'm not exactly sure whether I understand the reasoning being different. Can you,
actually,
do you know that?
What happened, I mean, and Louise, I'm sure, will contribute to this also. But, you know, in the early church, I'm reading this great book now by Gary Macy about the historical church. He's a theologian, teaches at a Jesuit university, and has documented, as many have, in the first few centuries of the early church, what we had were women deacons. We had women who were functioning as priests. We had women bishops, especially as an abbess in the large communities of women. But something happened around the 4th century where they began to – where sexism really began to take root and where women became a threat. And what happened really was patriarchy, especially around the 12th century, simply took over. And women were sidelined. And what we have as Catholics is simply a lot of ignorance about early church history and the role of women in the church. They were deacons in the church. They were bishops. They were priests. But so few Catholics know about this.
Sister Louise Akers, what do you think about that? Do you know what happened? Does anybody?
Oh, yes. I think I certainly concur with what Roy just said. And today, again, because of the education that was denied women for centuries, and in fact, when I first attempted to get my master's in theology, the head of the department where I was studying said, oh, no, you don't want to get your master's in theology. You want to do, and he said a couple other things, and I said, no, I want to be a theologian. He said, no, you don't. And this was like in 1970, 71. So anyhow, I prevailed and got my master's in theology and later got my doctor of ministry in theology. And so many women and also men and women of color who were likewise denied higher education in the church, not just in the church, but we're talking about the church. And what's happened then is these perspectives have been brought to scholarship so that today we have women scripture scholars, we have women theologians who are uncovering what has been a hidden tradition or dismissed tradition in history. And so what we're learning is, again, what Rory referred to in the early centuries of the church, there were women who had what we call house churches. There were women who had a Eucharistic table within their own homes. That's how it all started. And, of course, we also know about Magdalene and some of the and Mary, the mother of Jesus. I mean, had significant roles. And as scripture scholarship has uncovered and as theology has revealed to us, women did have a very significant role in the early church, and patriarchal tradition really emerged strongly in about the 4th century. From then it continues today. I did my doctorate on patriarchal power, and in this case I connected it with the poverty of women. Okay. Because it's not just the church that's patriarchal. Our institutions are patriarchal.
Let's take a call from Doug. Doug,
yeah,
you're on the air.
Yeah, Well, I'm not Roman Catholic, but I vote in a Catholic parish. And, you know, when I go up to vote, I see signs for the right-wing kind of Catholic radio station in town. And then, you know, on the table when I go in, there's the anti-abortion literature. And, you know, I'm starting to feel that if the church is going to be so discriminatory and political, that maybe they should lose their tax-exempt status.
You mean if they're going to discriminate against women?
Yeah, yeah, and well, more it's the political aspect of it, but yeah, I mean, if they're going to exclude 50% of the, you know, population from being a priest, it's it just seems pretty discriminatory.
Okay, thanks, Doug, for giving us a call.
Uh huh.
Wow, that would be.
Yes, I would like to look into that myself, being a grassroots organizer. Many actually are addressing, asking that basic question. We are tax exempt. How can it be possible that a tax exempt, you know, institution, organization discriminate against others because of race, because of color, sexual orientation? It just doesn't work that way.
Well, I was going to ask you about the sexual orientation issue. Obviously, I think it's kind of changed as a different timber when we talk about it in the context of the Roman Catholic Church, but the other churches, other denominations, they oppose giving gay people the right to be ministers.
Yes, equal members.
Equal members, I guess, sort of.
Yeah, they're a few light years ahead of us, the Episcopal Church,
they
and other
women,
faith
yeah.
traditions. Yes, I mean, they accept, you know, right. Gay priests, they accept women priests. And it's another, of course, one of those very cruel expressions of discrimination in the Catholic Church. I mean, our statements toward people of, you know, the other, you know, the gay and lesbian community, it's cruel the way they are treated. It's another form of discrimination. And therein also there is another movement within the church that's advancing rapidly. Like Louise said, you know, the women's ordination movement will not go away. This movement for equality and dignity in the, you know, the gay and lesbian struggle, I mean, it's not going away. It's all about justice. It's about peace, equality. And what I think is very important as we kind of come to the end, but is this issue of, you know, expressing our voices, as Louise said earlier. We have a voice, like Bishop Oscar Romero said in El Salvador before he was assassinated by those who abused their power, the military. He said, let those who have a voice speak out. And this is where we come in, wherever I speak. And I invite the listeners to come to the talk tonight at 7 p.m. And at the end, I will be saying, you know, let's break our silence. Let's call on the Pope, the bishops, priests, you know, everyone that we know. Let's work for equality in our church, in our communities, in our world.
And I would add.
I'm sorry, we're running out of time, Sister Louise. Can you make it 15 seconds?
I would just say, how inclusive do we want our faith community to be? Because if we want to be an inclusive community, we cannot exclude people based on our prejudices.
Okay. We're out of time. My thanks to Sister Louise Akers and Father Roy Bourgeois. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.